Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, will the Frontispiece 4 and friends finally have some relatively free time? Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hello, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Hecate, here to sell Hecca books and do Hecca crime.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Callisto Armitage, which is... You know what? You can call me Cal, listener.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Matchstick. And that's really all you need to know.
And hello, my name is Nick, and I will be playing Ing, an android drone operator who's got a fake Australian accent.
Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so.
Say it ain't so.
Wait, it's fake?
Yes, Australia is fake. Fun fact.
All of them.
I thought
they're all
so.
Actors.
Well, thank you, players. Let us get right into it with our recap of last time, this time courtesy of Cato.
Today was Friday, February 7th, 2020. It's been a long couple of months. A long month or so in particular. Today, Cal's target list seemed to redound, for the moment anyway, to Max Brodrig and Sean Howard, though, of course, from there, it becomes more or less the entire off-world cartel. Byrne was hacking, as they do. I know they know what they're doing. I say like a mantra, covering our tracks, falsifying, presenting alternate tracks. Cal took a fresh look at Bacon for a crisp source of income, arranged for some papers to be served, cracking a few eggs with Tama as the other chef in the kitchen. They did, in the end, bring home the bacon. Ing, meanwhile, priced out some upgrades for Tran. They grow sentient so fast. And I started working on Plan D. In case all of that falls apart and we need to be nowhere as far as everyone is concerned. Meanwhile, I ran the shop until it was time to head to the Canny Valley. We all went, including Apatia, including Bronwy, including Tama, including Byrne in the only moderately mortified flesh. I was proud of them. Nebby met us at the door, denying us the opportunity to properly impress the bouncer, and there, in the back, was Deb Random. There, too, was the android from the auction for over three from a lifetime ago, from just over a month ago. Joseph Chapek, smooth of voice and face alike. He had a glass of whiskey, which he swirled but never sipped. The question of whether he can sip remains open, therefore. Non-androids could never join Law Zero properly, we were told, but allies are allies, and Law Zero needs allies, and so, of course, do we. Ing gave the best answer to what we were doing there, naturally, mentioning Hand, which Joseph might not know what he thought of, and mentioning Fenrir, which Joseph had to look up. Then, after coming to some kind of understanding, we spent some time in the club proper. As the poet once said, we live in constant fear of the Western descent towards fascism, but I digress. The club was bumping. The ladies and the NBs looked good. The chips were flowing. There was much pain in the world, but not in that room. Byrne acquired a chip, financed by a recently decopped Cal. I kept an eye, but I also danced in joyous defiance of propriety and, to a lesser degree, gravity. Iconogasm played a good set, too, mortifying the very idea of flesh. And Tama wasn't entirely comfortable with the proceedings, but that was the worst of it just then. We all made it out, and home, and safe. And improbably, that day, that week, that month... this lifetime ended.
Very well done. I continue to really enjoy hearing our recaps. And I feel like that was very clear and hit the highlights. So we can get Well, I would say right into it, but really what we're getting into here is what folks are doing in the unstructured time. There, for once, isn't something extremely pressing bearing down on you. There's no one that you know of gunning for you right this instant. There's no specific looming deadlines, just overarching goals and the possibility of pursuing them, at least until someone or something comes to crash your party. So I think the first thing we're going to do is we do have some folks who do get some income. Cato, you get cash from your small business. Cal, you can get your last paycheck from PSS. Burn, we haven't made a big production of it here, but been doing some make work for Hahi in time since you sort of negotiated with her, which will, for now, net you two cash.
Nice.
And then, Ing, you've had your information gathering network going for, I think, probably around about a week now. And you've gotten some help in sorting through and finding buyers for the information that, make monstrous use of this access. Mm-hmm. So I would like you to roll 2d6 mm-hmm. and tell me the two values independently.
Okay. There's 1d6. The first 1d6 is 4. Mm-hmm. There's my second d6, and the second d6 is 4.
Okay. You will get 4 cash.
Okay.
Ooh. Critical 4.
And the rest of us got 2, is what I heard.
I believe that is correct for everyone, if I'm remembering the small business owner
rule correctly. The 2 becomes a 1, however, because I did rob the store coffers pay Gorister for his trouble. So I make that right by saying that I, sold a huge pile of historical Malcolm Gladwell texts. I now have 1 cash.
Yeah. Thank you for remembering that. I remember now talking about it, but I would not have remembered to implement it right now. Flush with whatever amounts of cash. You now have Saturday the 8th and beyond.
I think the shop may not have its most traffic on Saturdays, but we do tend to be open. People come around. So I do open the shop, basking in my unembezzled, uncooked books, feeling like an upright citizen, but in sarcasm quotes. I'm ready if anyone comes by for fair or foul fare.
I come by perhaps a little too much frequently in a variety of sweatpants and very casual attire.
Love it.
I actually I don't gasp the first time I see you dressed that way, but like I don't have a poker face, right? There's probably probably a whir of servos and probably the reaction is clear.
I try to muster a glower, but instead just shrug a single shoulder.
I return the shrug and I smile and proffer, coffee or whatever is desired.
I accept the coffee.
I think I'm in and out of the store as well. Just kind of keeping up a more than usual banter with my drones, kind of like pointing out books and particular topics and basically like
your baby talking your drones.
I kind of am, and I'm just like kind of sharing my thoughts on humanity and what various things are and what they mean to me, and you can make your own come to your own conclusions, but for what it's worth, here's Chaucer, here's you know, burn.
If you don't mind me, fiating it, your copy of the Canterbury Tales and a copy of a book on human cognitive development for, you know, for human babies, arrive together for you.
Nice.
From the frontispiece.
I love it.
And Hyperion.
Mm. And Hyperion. That has a little note attached to it that says, from Byrne. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This is an aside, but, Nick, you having Ing talking to your drones this way immediately unlocked a memory from childhood of reading the AI Gang series from Bruce Coville, they manage, some kids manage to generate an artificial general intelligence just by like scanning books into a computer. That immediately made me think of it. Yeah, any listeners who are unaware, the work of Bruce Coville, excellent, excellent children's novels for quite a range of ages. Maybe AI Gang is not his zenith, but pretty fun.
Jeremy Thatcher, Dragon Hatcher.
Literally foundational to my personality.
Same. And I wrote him about Into the Land of the Unicorns and also received a letter back. So
that's amazing. I wrote him in fifth grade for a school project about how much I loved the Magic Shop books and heard back 3.5 years later with a like couple of chapters of the Skull of Truth forthcoming Magic Shop book, like in yes. I felt so very, very special.
I also got the Skull of Truth sample with my letter, and I recall it happening at a delay, but because I was a kid, so
yeah,
it didn't seem that long to me.
I had forgotten I had written the letter by the time I heard back, but I was thrilled to hear back.
A careful perusal of the frontispiece catalog will note that among the books with no courses from G-Pole attached are all of these books.
Yay. This brings me joy.
Byrne, what have you been up to?
Hacking. Specifically, within the hacking, looking into Canopus Hear You, and continuing to do basically any sort of odd job make work, paying hackery that Hahi has for me or that otherwise comes my way.
Mm-hmm. I believe we're going to carry over your extremely good roles from last time on this because they concern roughly the same things. I guess I'll just add that Haru's tasks for you are varied enough to keep you guessing a little bit, but mostly do sort of cohere in a sort of approximate realm of digging up intelligence on various personnel within cartel corporations.
Ooh, love that.
So rather than go into detail here on like who and what you find, I'm going to leave it a little vague for now, but I will task you as a player with reminding me when we start dealing with cartel insiders that you might have some information here, and I will make rolls on my end to see whether the information in question was included in the stuff that Haru cool. had you doing.
And, please also let me know if any of this is or could be paid work.
My assumption is that it is going to be paid work, but periodically.
Okay, cool.
The work will take place constantly. The pay will come every couple of weeks.
Okay.
Excellent.
The other thing I work on while the shop continues to operate is Plan D. Mm-hmm. I continue asking around to see mm-hmm. about a place we can be in the event that we can't be here.
Yeah, and I think that's going to, again, be carrying over from, weirdly enough, I remember you got a 10 on this last time. And our sort of plan going forward was that I was going to solicit another role from you if and when going to ground was a priority, to see sort of like how well your plans worked out and where you ended up. So we'll keep that in mind as you sort of continue to feel things out. I guess one question, this is not mechanical so much as narrative, but when you are consulting your sources and putting out figures, putting out feelers and whatnot for this kind of thing, how broadly are you casting your nets?
I would say, I don't know how much time we're abstracting, but the longer it takes, the more broadly.
Okay.
So, you know, depending on when I get a nibble, and both for the GM and for the listener, I do have scavenger on my character sheet, which means I always have a few tools with me. You'd be surprised what you can do with some duct tape and a paperclip. So with a day's work and one cache, I can turn any private area into a workshop. So that'd kind of be what I'd be on the lookout for, is a place where we can not just hide out, but operate, not just survive, but thrive.
Most excellent, and glad to know. I had forgotten that was on your character sheet, so thank you for the reminder.
Honestly, at that rate, I probably take you on a briefly guided tour of parts of the basement.
That's fair. Yeah, I do not fear a fixer-upper, given the handiness there. Do we find anything promising in the basement?
Again, I'm going to kind of leave that vague until we have to come for our roll, because promising things in the basement now could, in 3 weeks, be almost totally unusable
by someone else.
Yeah, totally.
So
we scout it's a good opportunity to get burned, to not necessarily just be, you know, in the room eating hacker chow.
Yeah, and
I probably awkwardly try to tag along.
You are dragooned. Possible emphasis goon, but not really said out loud.
Well, and for my part, right, my thought there is that, like, yeah, no, doing this definitely, like, contributes to the eventual outcome. You know, I will throw it on the pile with your role in terms of, like, what happens when, you know, we trigger the go to ground protocol.
Don't love that you said when, not if, but cool.
I mean, Chekhov's Flophouse, question mark?
There must be a dandy in the third act, what?
I'm okay with
a whole
this.
House of them. Yeah.
I got nothing.
Well, this is a little bit of an aside, but sometime in this downtime vagary, I'd like to see if I can find a time where the three of Cato and Cal and Ing are present, but not Burn, and just mention, you know, I've come into some money lately, and I'm just thinking back to that time that Burn went off the radar, and I'm not sure if perhaps it'd be worth pooling money to bail them out so that something similar doesn't happen in the future. What do you think? I mean, obviously there's something to bring up with them as well, but
sure, as long as they don't spend it on drugs again.
To be fair, they spent your money on drugs.
And I
ex-cops these days.
Them. Yeah,
I'm all for it. I'm a little light on cash after paying Gorister and unembezzling just a bit. And I do need to keep a little in reserve if we need to do Plan D. But aside from that, I can't think of any reason not to make bailing out Burn a priority.
Yeah, it's reasonable. And I mean, I'd like to chip away at expanding the Autonomous Collective's capabilities as well. But, you know, if debt would tear our little family apart, then that seems like a priority.
I'm not sure any amount of money makes it impossible that they'll disappear, but making it less likely, hard to put a price on that.
Yeah, fair.
Before you finish speaking, I hold out one cash.
And I'll note that, having consulted the rule book, you can reduce your burden by paying 10 minus your burden in cash. So the higher your burden is, the less it costs.
So we might not have enough.
And Burn's burden for the record, is 3?
So it would be 7.
Yes.
I believe it would cost seven cash among the three of us at this moment.
Yeah, I can give four. Yeah, we have plus six. One, six.
Oh.
I was going to say, I think you have exactly seven given Cal giving one in.
Oh, and Burn themselves got two, right?
Some cash, yeah.
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 So we could do this. That would leave us cashless for example, it's Plan D, in addition to, you know, drone CPU mm-hmm. changes and such.
Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't need to roleplay out all the downtime, but, is this something that we should elide past and just kind of describe?
So how much cash do we have total?
Two, four, two, two, is I think we've got.
I only have one.
So we have.
You're correct. I forgot about that, the embezzlement. So
we have nine total cash, it sounds like.
One, two, six,
eight. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
As stated in side channels, out of character, Burn is not the optimal target for this, I think. Not least because their reaction would be, sorry, fucking what? No. And thus, I would say probably Cato.
I think in character, I say, it's a good idea, which does not mean Burn will think it's a good idea.
And I am red for filth.
For the record, Burn has three burden. Cato and Cal have two, and Ing has one.
Remind us, for present purposes, how economic shock rolls deal with two characters living together?
Yeah, let me just make sure that I have the specifics on that. Sharing the burden. If two or more characters with different burdens live together, find their effective or average burden by adding their burdens together, dividing the number by the number of characters, and rounding down. So I believe that means that effectively rooming with Cato makes your burden.
So no combination of, like, no single burden reduction on the part of any character will reduce the economic shock.
For Cato and Burn.
Or for...
Oh, good point.
Cal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, we have the two pairs. So.
I'm not sure how I process this information in character. you do come in one day and find me squinting at an economics textbook on my display. I mean, I've been running some numbers, and I'm not sure that this plan, appreciated as it is necessarily the best use for tallying up some sums visibly, all of our cash.
Before you finish speaking, I pocket my one cash again.
All right, no guarantees that the cash will still be there if the calculus changes.
I mean, true. I guess I want to emphasize your generous spirit is appreciated. I would really like to worry less about what we're currently worrying about, but I'm not sure there's a straight path to it.
Well,
I don't know what to do.
To
worry less about that.
Yeah, I am not sure I've had a full good night's sleep since the first time they disappeared, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they've always come back. It's a lot more than nothing. Not everybody, you know, does.
All right.
Well, this was depressing. Let's figure out what to do with this cash with which we're flushed. I think
if we all pursue the projects we're working on, we'll be more ready and there will be less reason for a parting.
All right. Well, then I, for one, am going to splurge. I mean, this money's just burning a hole in my pocket, so I think I'm going to upgrade the collective. At some point, maybe I can find other ways to pay you back for all the good you've done me.
Don't worry about it, but also, for what it's worth, I don't doubt you'll have the opportunity. You're on the up and up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, sooner rather than later, I think I'm going to be paid crime money. So, you know, there's that.
I'm going to pretend like I didn't hear that.
You don't have to pretend anymore. You're fired.
Am I?
Aren't you?
I guess I'm still deciding.
Yeah. All right.
I am visibly uncomfortable with the fact that I have the most stable employment situation among the group. Not a feeling I'm especially used to.
I somehow catch a scent of that and then look at you directly.
I put away the ledger and the economics textbook, which probably just involves tapping a button, but nonetheless has the general impression of someone, you know, hiding pornography they were looking at when we walk into the room.
You can't afford a security guard, can you?
Well, I mean, we were able to afford a shakedown, so we could probably make it work if you're not expecting us to pay well.
I mean, I can bounty hunt to make ends meet, but having something more consistent would be nice.
You're hired.
What's the uniform?
I think you're pretty much wearing it.
I brush pizza crumbs off of my shirt.
I give a gesture of, yeah, that's the stuff. That's the badge.
Perfect. Wonderful. Monday.
I think I probably have no cash now because I need to pay Cal. I guess not necessarily. The front is, the books could balance. Depends what kind of week/month we have. So
I was going to say, we'll worry about that next time you receive cash.
This is the cash the small business gotten. Owner understands that that's a problem for next week, Cato. So all good. Yeah.
Gorister comes back to work on Monday, studiously not mentioning anything from the past, you know, week. And doing more mundane work, repairing, upgrading, jailbreaking augments of folks who come in. Back in his element. I suppose, having gotten the near-term stuff, and having gotten some of the ongoing things as well, is there anything we haven't covered in particular that folks are doing, you know, Sunday through Saturday at least? Burn?
Yeah. Could you refresh me on the general notion of the relationship between cash and actual, like, itemized false identities?
I mean, I think it's actually a matter more of time than of cash here, right?
In terms of, because the one that I have initially is actually an asset.
Sure. For the purposes here, like, I guess, are you charging for your labor here?
I mean, no one here is paying me to make a false ID for them. That was more whether cash would accelerate the process.
I suppose cash might accelerate the process, but if you're not willing to pay the cash, or if you don't have the cash to pay, then you have the talents to do this you know, by falsifying transactions.
Okay.
I have the page pulled up for fake IDs. I know that's more of just a surface element of the fake identity, but they do cost two the first time and then one after.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I suppose the thing here is that no one here is buying a fake ID just off the market, right? Is
okay.
The consideration that I was making. Because yes, you are absolutely correct. As an asset, they do cost, but we are sort of getting them, I suppose, at cost. And frankly, Burn's hacking rules last time for doing this were superlative. So if Burn is going through the trouble of falsifying all of these various records server side in station government databases, I don't see any particular reason why they should need to make good on transactions they can just claim happened in the records.
Fair enough.
To the degree that's kind of my outlook on it anyway. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that the time frame, the expanded time frame we talked about last time, is sort of the cost here. That you're doing it slowly rather than charging for it. But if you wish to expedite it with cash, then I mean, feel free to, you know, bill your friends on it.
No, this wouldn't be like me billing them. It's I have two cash. I should spend it on something or it'll go away.
Sure. I mean, if you want to spend the two cash, then we can expedite the fake ID process. If you want to find something else to spend two cash on, though, then you don't have to get the fake ID successfully.
Okay.
While I'm thinking about it, if I recall correctly, the upgrades that you are looking to do to Tran were going to involve four cash. You have four cash. Are you looking to...
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. So I will make that purchase. If Crazy Ruru happens to have what I need, then all the better, but move on if not. And I'll do what I can to upgrade. I'm not sure how long it takes to install. And on top of that, you'd mentioned before that it is possible to have a no cache kind of distributed consciousness on available systems. I'd like to do that too. That might take longer to do, but sounds narratively interesting and something that Ing would do.
Yeah, it is going to be a longer term project, both in terms of like implementing it and in seeing any kind of result from it. But let's go ahead and get the roll for that first. Mm-hmm. Let's get a clever plus robotics, which is 2d6 plus 6 for you.
Okay, that's a 6 plus 6. So it's a 12.
12. All right. Yeah, so it is an ongoing sort of like refinement project for you to help Tran distribute its consciousness, across like wireless environments. But you've got a good start on it. In the meantime, I think that you can roll your cool plus acquire asset, which is going to be 2d6 plus 4 for the processor upgrade that you were looking at.
Okay, so that's a 6 and a 5 for a total of 11 plus, you said, 4 on top of that?
4.
So it's 15. 16.
Mm-hmm. 15.
15.
That's what I said. I said 15.
Me too. I'm good at math.
Yeah. So let me just double check here. That is... Okay. So you do manage to hit up the night market. And lucky you, Crazy Aruru is in attendance and does have a suspiciously discounted version of the part that you need. In his words, "The methods of Crazy Aruru are inscrutable!" And then he literally throws the processing unit at you, and you manage to catch it, thankfully. But
left-handed?
You only end up paying...
With the soft one?
Left-handed, yes. Yeah, yeah. You end up only paying 2 cash for it, since you found Crazy Aruru on a good night.
All right. Well, I'll certainly be talking you up to the rest of the campus. This is quite the discount. I will be back, my friend.
He puts his hands on either side of his head, sort of like pressing against his temples, and goes, "Crazy Aruru is unknowable!" And then ducks down behind his counter so that you can no longer see him.
Wow. I love this man. And I take my upgrades home, and I do what I can with them.
Yeah, it is the work of an evening to expand Tran's processing power such that the extra processor load that you detected on Tran's diagnostic readout is compensated for and then some by a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the net gain is additional processor load was about 7%, and your net gain on the upgrade is about 3%. Okay. For Tran. So you offset and then a little bit for Tran's processing. Wonderful. And then, like I said, the distributed computation project is ongoing. Mm-hmm. So just to make sure we're not missing out on anything here, Cal has taken up let's call it part-time security guard function at the frontispiece, and maybe pursuing other opportunities. Burn is working on fake IDs as well as stuff for Haruhiryu.
I probably also want to acquire a shard card. Although, well, it's 2 for open and 4 for secure, so I can only afford the open, which is unfortunate, mm-hmm. but...
All right, so I think what this looks like is, Cal, if you want to roll an acquire asset for me, let's have you actually do your bounty hunts first. That makes the most sense to me. So I think that's going to be clever plus bounty hunter roll for 2d6 plus 6.
I got a 6 and a 3, so 9 plus 6 is 15.
All right. This is a little abstracted from the way that these are usually handled, which is like in mission, but we're between missions and Cal's between official jobs, so I think it makes the most sense. It's since we're doing irregular things anyway with your role and my role, you get 3 cash in the course of a week for you, let's say, nab 1 normal-ish bounty and 1 really piddly one.
Excellent.
So, following that, let's get your acquire asset roll 2d6 plus cool. And I don't think you have the acquire asset specialty. No, you do not.
What happens if I get doubles?
That is a critical, whether it's a success or a failure.
I have 2 fives.
Okay, so that is 10 on the roll plus your, what was it, cool is 2 is 12. And so that's going to be reduces the price of the asset by 1. So you could acquire a sticky shocker for 3 cash.
Ooh. I have to choose between 2. Hey, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Could I also acquire a drone gun for 2?
That would be a separate acquire asset roll to find out if you could reduce the price.
Darn. Okay, because I was going to say, can I get like that and then a motorcycle?
Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I know that a motorcycle was an asset that you had at character creation.
A scooter.
Well, yes. Fair enough.
Electric bike.
So I'm trying to remember exactly what we did with it. I know we had a conversation about the disposal of PSS assets, but I can't off the top of my head remember what we decided. So if you want to try to upgrade to a motorcycle, that'll be an acquire asset, but I will leave you with the scooter and or electric bike without having to pay for it if you so desire. Because I don't want to deprive you of something that you bought at character creation.
That's good to know, because I thought it was still back at PSS.
I mean, technically it belonged to PSS, and there may be something on air a little ways back that contradicts me here, but I don't rightly remember in this very moment on air. So my call is going to be, I'm not going to take something away from you that you paid for at Kerogen.
Gotcha. So I will go for the sticky shocker.
Okay.
And you said I could get it for 3?
For 3, yes, because your acquire asset was good enough to reduce the cost by 1.
Excellent. And I still have 2 cash, so I guess I could try to upgrade the trade in the PSS labeled electric bike and see if someone would give me a motorcycle instead.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you want to do another acquire asset roll, then we could do that.
I have 2 4s.
All right.
Okay.
So that is 8 plus your pool of 2 is 10.
I roll a 2 3s next time, I'm buying a lottery ticket.
Which would reduce the cost from 3 to 2.
That works.
Yeah. So yeah, you can trade up from your scooter to a motorcycle. So
no more putt-putt.
I mean, this is effectively mechanics neutral, but you now have your own motorcycle instead of a vaguely misappropriated PSS scooter.
A wee-oo.
Putt,
badass.
Yeah. So if I have my head on straight, you spent a total of
all my cash.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good enough.
5, I believe.
Yes, that was where I was going. All right. So then I think our next acquire asset was from Burn for a shard card.
Yes. And that is an 11.
All right. I believe that reduces
plus whatever relevant.
Well, I guess let me see then. 2d6 plus cool is 12 total. So that's going to be, let me navigate real quick. Still just 1 reduction in cost. So you could get an open shard card for 1 cash or a secure one for 3 cash.
Does anyone have a cash that I could borrow for an unspecified amount of time?
Damn.
Not anymore.
The only concern on my side is Plan D. But if you ask, there's no way I'm saying no.
I think I will ask, and then I will go work very hard for Hiryu or for Hahi.
Fair enough.
I will pretend to be more hesitant than I am, and fork over the 1 cash.
All right. So, somewhat relevantly here, what network are you specifically acquiring a secure shard card for?
Can we leave this nebulous for when we next do something against a cartel?
I think the way that this goes is you specify the entity that you want the shard card to apply to, and we can specify which specific network within that umbrella when it comes time.
Okay, so thoughts for the general, either this could be something toward infiltrating IMX or going up the security food chain. Or it could be related to Canopus Hiryu's prior employ. Because I suspect, honestly, that we're going to hit at least one of those, probably both, before we get too far.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
You can always roll for it.
Well, okay, so what entity or entities do I know of specifically related to Canopus, Adam?
Good question. So,
in which we export labor to the GM.
So, I think, Byrne, that based on your research into Canopus Hiryu, the sort of corporate umbrella of Shard Card you're looking at is for Asano Heavy Industries, his last known employer before his disappearance.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that then.
Marvelous. Right. That probably does it for the shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Rad.
That's good.
I mean, we don't have any more cash.
From here on out, it's all stealing.
I mean, you know.
Oh no, whatever will I do?
Speaking of stealing, I suppose a question that's on the table for this like whole week is, are you collectively or individually getting in touch with Joseph Chapek in order to share information on Dreamers? That was kind of like the thing that he had said for you guys to think on and then reach out to him about.
Yeah, we should have a conversation about that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Apatia should be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
Doable.
This is sensitive to everyone, but it's also like close for her in a way that is unique. And like we have knowledge from her that is not precisely ours to share, right? Not that we would share it without talking to her, but like establishing where the line even is from her perspective.
But it's very specifically not ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we know from past campaigns, if we say her name enough, she should show up.
Well, and in this campaign, you have digital communication with which to like, you
know,
reach out to her.
Oh, okay. True.
Not just say her name into a mirror a bunch of times. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so let's give her a call, and then presuming that she comes over at some point.
Yeah, you guys can arrange a time. I will leave it as ambiguous as needed in the week here, but for some approximately blunch time, you know, she will hang out in the back room with everybody and have this discussion.
All right, so just to have a place to start, is there any particular reason not to acknowledge to those that already know that we won the bidding, the auction, that we stored the Dreamer with us for a while till things got too hot and set it free?
Well, Joseph was one of the ones bidding against me.
Right.
Well, I think presumably we can, as a result of that, inquire as to the motivation for the bidding.
True.
We could start off without necessarily revealing that we were the winners, but, you know, I understand that you were recently at an auction may get a reaction.
I like that.
I guess the other question is whether we mention the attempted jailbreak, as it were. We had other beings trying to break over three out of here, and was that just a Dreamer affair, or were there people involved?
I think that would be a secondary revelation after we see what we get from the reaction to the auction, but I see no reason to not include that.
Mm-hmm. Let it come up over the course of the, not going to say interrogation, but
the discussion.
That.
Apatia will chime in here to say, Perhaps the best way to prosecute this exchange of information is for you to share with me what you're willing to share with Joseph and for me to take point in messaging him.
It's fine by me. I'm still getting used to how much I should reveal and how much I should keep close to the vest. So I invite the opinions of others. How much is too much?
Apatia nods at this and says, I am, I suppose, inclined to share what I know, but I'm also inclined to try not to give organized crime leverage over me. So that's the calculus I'd be running, left to my own devices. What kinds of considerations would you all like me to keep in mind?
How about we know that he recently bid on an item such as that which he was inquiring about, and see what he knows about the other bidders?
Yeah. No, I'm concerned at least as much about parity of the information sharing as I am about very much else.
Fair.
As far as what we are and aren't willing to share, of course, I mean, parity is the name of the game, if all goes well, but I feel like most of what I'm not sure about sharing is on the level of vibes. I mean, we probably came about as close as communicating as anybody ever has, but we still didn't come especially close.
Close, yeah.
Apatia.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that.
Apatia drops in and says, well, I'm certainly not going to share my unique encounter with anyone who wasn't there, and...
I cut in. No need to. Wasn't the question.
Yeah, no.
Different dreamer. Probably. But anyway, different encounter.
She slowly says, not going to bring up the one from my deeper past, but also the effect that the dreamers had on me when you all were there is, I think,
I wouldn't
stay.
No, that invites an inquiry, investigation, testing, etc.
Yes.
Keep yourself safe.
I assume that the same goes for, and she looks at Ing, your drone that was, well, in their vicinity for longer.
Very much so, yes. Feel very protective.
She nods.
Thank you.
So
that then, information should be classified amongst this group.
I think so as well. So what I could share then is what I've gleaned from online communities, things that probably someone in Law Zero, if not the whole organization, is already aware of, and perhaps some of the behavioral information and physical descriptions of the dreamers that we've come into contact with over three, the Leapers, and whatever that other thing was.
And don't forget to ask about the bidders.
Certainly not.
And are we all here, there, for this? I assume so. And, you know, if he starts pushing in a way that feels like it's designed to provoke a reaction, we can step in.
A patient nods slowly and says, yes, I think this will be a multi-recipient email I shall initiate so that everyone is in the initial, and if I get a singular reply rather than a reply all, I will BCC everybody, you know, so that everyone's in the loop, even if, you know, the visible scope of the conversation is narrowed.
I don't claim to be an expert exactly or anything, but in general, if you're trying to avoid a gang having leverage over you, it helps for them to think of you as rolling a little bit deep. More than just you. So, we're here for you, is what I'm saying, and we appreciate that you're here for us.
Hypatia gives you that chrome smile and kind of like lays one hand, reaching up to lay one hand, like kind of on your cheek and says, thank you.
The small hand goes to her hand.
It's probably still bigger than hers. If there isn't anything else that needs to be established there, then in relatively short order, Apatia will send an email to the address that you got from Joseph, sort of detailing the things that you agreed to share in broad strokes and inviting reciprocity for more specifics. There will be a little bit of a lag time in response, but the conversation picks up as a sort of reply all message chain, where Joseph sort of asks for more details while sharing some things that you were largely aware of in terms of like things that Apatia had learned in her investigations but did not specify in her initial email. So this conversation can be ongoing as necessary, both via email and in person, though you will note that starting with the reply from Joseph to Apatia's initial email, the sender is hidden.
Can I glean anything?
Sounds like a hacking role to me.
Sure does. That is double fours, so a 15.
Indeed.
And ghosting is a 17, but not a crit.
Okay. Let me make a quick roll for Law Zero's hacker division, as it were. So you are successful in that you are able to pinpoint the sort of like email server being used, but unsurprisingly, Law Zero has some pretty capable hackers, IT people,
would be very worried if they didn't
on their side. And so you are able to identify the server domain as being at a random string of letters and numbers, 26 deep .net. But you aren't able to trace that sort of like
mostly I'm checking for like to what degree is this overtly suspicious.
I mean, if you were working for a corporation, this would be hella suspicious, but since you know you're dealing with organized crime, this is like the minimum you'd expect them to have in terms of security.
Okay, cool.
You just then don't have any details on where this is hosted or by whom.
Sure. And like, I don't press, basically, okay. But just sort of, all right, nothing immediately shady as relates to us. Mm-hmm.
This is essentially like if you were managing the email servers for a larger organization, this seems like the sort of thing that you would do. You don't know if it would necessarily be to the same rigor as you would have because you're not pressing. But, right. You know, this looks like decent OPSEC from your perspective.
Cool. We support that. Mm-hmm. Even with people we're not squarely working with.
In sort of getting this like week of stuff accounted for, is there anything that we have left on the back burner or on the cutting room floor, as it were, so far? Anything that anybody wants to get on the record?
Just my findings in the research aspect of things and like the progress in the fake ID realm of things?
Sure. So to tackle the second one first, the fake ID project continues apace. You are, let's see, able to basically settle Ing's fake ID, since you had kind of already been working on that going back a little ways. And you managed to more or less complete, pending a couple of like confirmation steps, Kato's fake ID.
Okay.
I know that the given name was going to be Ned, but I guess we'll get into the names when we need to use them. And the rest are in the queue, so to speak, but in order to avoid flagging anything in the algorithms that check for these things, you know, that's about as fast as you can move.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of ongoing research into Cannabis Hear You, you think that you have now basically both acquired and collated what could broadly be called publicly available information. That is to say, not just the press, but also like records that,
yep,
you know, aren't like corporate proprietary records, to sketch out the timeline of Cannabis Hear You's career before his disappearance. And I think this is a recapitulation of some stuff that we have talked about before, but Cannabis Hear You was a medium visibility science educator who took a job with Asano Heavy Industries in orbit and then disappeared a little while after that. And there aren't public records of precisely what he was working on. You do have like his movements from Earth to orbit, but you'll have to get into Asano Heavy Industries files, and you're guessing probably into some stuff that they specifically redact from their archival information to get the truth, so to speak. That yep. said, the one other thing that I will put out there is that the official records of his disappearance are oddly open-ended. You would kind of expect for there to be a law enforcement conclusion on his fate by now, but the file ends with it being noted that he hasn't been seen in like 2 weeks, and that was the better part of a year ago.
Okay.
So there's no indication that law enforcement is still looking into this, but the implication of the information that you have found is that they like technically should be.
Yeah.
Anything else before we catch up on what would that be, like Saturday the, I think, 15th?
Schedule a meeting with Hahi, but
good deal.
That can be whenever.
Yeah, yeah. Noted for the time being. Anybody else?
And whatever limited available time I have between working security at the front SPs, which I imagine is very intensive, and bounty hunting, I probably continue to pull up whatever records I can on my next two targets and probably touch base with Burn about the drugs he got.
Let's handle them in that order. So real quick, if you would like to roll an investigation plus clever for me, which would be 2d6 plus 6.
I can't make this up. I don't even know if that's visible. That's 2 sixes.
Okay. It was super not visible, but...
This is the most wild night of...
In any case...
Is that... So 2d6 plus 6 is what you said? Is that like
so that's going to be an 18 critical success.
And also the closest we can get to incrementing the counter.
Yes.
True.
I've made my contribution.
Yeah.
I think this is the second time you've made a contribution in this fashion.
I think so. So
I was thinking I've never rolled doubles until this session. It was going to be a session high for me in the peaks. So I'm going to redact that one now.
So I guess I can't promise everything on a silver platter, but pie in the sky, like, going looking, what information would you have found? Because this is essentially as good a role as you can get. So,
what's your wish list? I would be looking for an inn to either ruin their reputation to the point of forcing them to step out of their current position, or finding a way to put them in conflict with one another in such a way that I would feel confident that they'd take care of it for me.
Okay.
Truly pie in the sky.
Yeah, yeah. So if your pie in the sky goal here is to set Max Brodrick and Sean Howard against each other?
One of them, yes. One of the options I'm looking into. Because the only thing better than taking out a list of people is having them take one another out for you. And that seems an easy in, since Max Broderick already had complaints about PSS coverage and the old brick through his window problem.
And Max Broderick is also just a noted dipshit.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Let me...
Always forget Sean Howard's name because it sounds like he's some radio personality.
Okay. So what's interesting is that you don't have to do any hacking. You don't have to do any social engineering. You basically just have to connect 3 or 4 steps of dots in Sean Howard's career. Like a lot of tech company people, Sean Howard essentially boosts very right-wing authoritarian dystopian projects, but doesn't seem to have seen himself as a jackboot. He's got a personal mythology, if you will, of being pro-social, despite the things that he, actually does. IMX didn't start on Grand Cross. It started in Silicon Valley, Earthside in the U.S. And Sean Howard was not especially high up in IMX before coming to orbit, but now he manages a decent chunk of their orbital presence, and it seems like his side motion, I guess, into being in charge of security for Selden District on IMX's behalf is sort of like his proving ground, right? If he can do this for them, then he becomes C-suite personnel for the whole company. But he's kind of just banking on nobody giving enough of a shit about him to notice that, again, like a not insignificant number of tech douchebags, his past is pretty leftoid. In fact, you have found a pretty indisputable paper trail linking him to a socialist organization in San Francisco 15 years ago that technically he has not paid dues to since he left Earthside, but is still on the rolls of. And you have a pretty comprehensive knowledge of Max Brodrig's BS. And if this were publicized, he would not be able to ignore it and still keep his audience.
Hey, Burn.
Yes.
I send all the information that I just found from my research, though it might take a little bit of fits and starts as I figure out how to get it on my phone to you, Burn.
Yeah. I mean, it happens, whether it happens quickly or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. This is fascinating. What would you like me to be doing with it?
Making it public. In a place ideally where Max could not miss it.
How splashily?
Very.
Okay. So, I send the information to the L4 Refugees Organization.
Mm-hmm.
I send it to every GPOL student group that has like any political leanings whatsoever in either direction.
Mm-hmm.
phrased, you know, appropriately as bait according to those leanings. Send it to any, like, anti-student organization that I'm aware of.
Mm.
I send it to, like, several conservative organizations,
mm-hmm.
Particularly any that have any sort of, like, anti-tech leanings.
Mm-hmm.
And I send an email with it to Tama with a suggestion that she wrap it around a brick and throw it through Max Brodrig's window again.
Please CC me in on that one.
I don't, because it's a surprise for you. I do in the email request that video of it be gotten for Cal. Don't include yourself in the video.
This brick obviously could not have been an email.
I hope you encourage her to use the holographic projection armor to make her hair.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm. when you are distributing,
basically,
this...
I want to have every organization of every conflicting political bent, mm-hmm. have it for the next week or so's talking points.
Mm-hmm.
All of them talking about it like it's a bad thing, but like it's a bad thing differently.
Mm-hmm. When you send it to anti-student groups, where or who do they think it's coming from?
They think it's coming from one of their own members.
Okay. Easily doable, no role required. This is workaday spoofing stuff. Even if it can be seen through,
yeah,
it provides the cover that you're looking for. So let me, I guess, dig into something that had kind of been going on and that we just hadn't had the specific attention to pay attention to. So this, like, period following this protest and the violence and bombing and everything, it's been a sort of periodic topic, you know, in sort of the attention cycle, attention economy, if you will, of the station. Apparently made news Earthside, though it was not as splashy there. And one of the common media talking points from center and right sort of media on station has been that GPOL is a technical school, so of course all of this protest was like an op, you know, these were not students. This is not a, you know, like an arts campus or like a, you know, liberal arts college kind of thing. This is all people from outside the university coming and stirring up trouble until they got the splashy headline that they wanted. There are some more left outlets that are pushing this narrative as that this is like an op from the right, but mostly it's a center and right thing saying that this is an op from the left co-opting GPOL, you know, this poor neutral institution caught in the middle of everything, you know, and trying to like besmirch its good name.
And hey, I'm giving them a specific scapegoat for it.
Exactly. You're you know, revelation about Sean Howard here lands in the middle of this discourse cycle as organizations all over the spectrum and outlets all over the spectrum are looking to talk about IMX and its new presence in Selden District. So honestly, between Cal and Byrne, couldn't have been better timing to absolutely ruin Sean Howard's complexion, if nothing else.
I love this for us.
So, by the time we roll around to sort of checking back in on everything on Saturday the 15th, there is like 2 days of news cycle about conservative outlets in particular calling Sean Howard's credentials into question, asking if he wasn't behind this, that there's all sorts of fun stories about this being, you know, a cynical op to displace a perfectly legitimate law enforcement organization with, you know, leftoid tech industry solutions that are going to go soft on crime, but also coming at him from the other direction that his bona fides are questionable and that, you know, he's actually like not the right guy for the job, even if they don't object to corporate technical oversight, you know, of law enforcement. And of course, we remember that Sean Howard is one of 3 human employees of IMX in Selden District. So while the drones that IMX has brought in are proliferating and, you know, sort of doing their whole algorithmic law enforcement thing for the
which is hopefully much interfered with,
you know, it kind of remains to be seen. There isn't, you know, other than underage drinking and illicit drugs. You know, the main crime in Selden District most of the time is like sexual assault, and the drones are uniquely unqualified to enforce those laws, even so far as human law enforcement would be interested. So, you know, whether or not they're effective at all of this is actually like still kind of in the air, as far as like a week's evidence would give, you know, to sort of evaluate. But that kind of doesn't matter to the discourse cycle that Cal and Byrne have kicked off here. Where exactly this will land is still ongoing, because it is sort of contentious, and it has the disadvantage of being relatively specific. So while it stays in the discourse cycle, it doesn't take up like a huge chunk of station-wide airtime, even if what it does take up is especially acrimonious. But
I watch all of it perched up in the frontispiece in my sweatpants.
Is there any noise from Broderick about the brick?
Interestingly, no. There's no report to IMX. There's no press about it from Broderick.
Has he said anything about Sean Howard?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he has fallen on the... So he knows what side his bread is buttered on, and he has not taken the anti-tech sector line, because that would, you know, that would be biting the hand that feeds to a certain extent. What he has done is taken the anti-Sean Howard line, that IMX has blundered in putting this fifth columnist in charge of law enforcement in Selden District, and, you know, they've been duped, and that if they had done their due diligence, they never would have put radical left communist socialist murderer like Sean Howard in charge of their presence in Selden District. The best thing they can do now is admit that they made a mistake and replace him with somebody with real law enforcement credentials, etc., etc. No statement has been forthcoming as yet from IMX. They seem to be hoping that it will blow over without them having to do anything. Whether that turns out to be the case or not is as yet not able to be determined. I think that makes it...
Go ahead. I scribble IMX drones on my list with like a little arrow from Max and Sean Howard.
Mm-hmm. That probably brings us to Saturday. We've had a week. We've gotten all the things that we were trying to get ongoing, on gone, to invent a terrible word. I mean, the good news is that it's been a relatively fruitful interval. There hasn't been a whole lot of direct jeopardy, you know, correspondences that have been started are ongoing and unfolding, people's investigations, the process of faking IDs, the upgrading of the drones, running the business, all of these things are relatively unmolested during this time, and nothing bears down, you know, on your front doors collectively during all of this, which is nice after all of the hectic drama and eventfulness of the protest and the violence.
The one day that took like 6 or 8 sessions?
Yeah, you know, the various different compressions of time that this medium demands / allows for. You have had some breathing room. Rare in the unfolding of history. But nothing lasts entirely forever. And Saturday morning, I'm going to rule that among our player characters, Ing is the first one to rise in the morning. And you awake to a message sent from Apatia to sort of just like the lowest key email addresses of all of your co-conspirators. The subject is Key Smash, essentially. And the contents of the message read, "Think there's something outside, I..." More Key Smash.
Fuck. I knock on Cal's door. Get up.
I'm up. What's up?
Right. Apatia's in trouble. Got an email. Think she might have been abducted, killed, God knows what. Here's the email, but I think we need to get going now.
Yes, we do. Let the others know.
Will do.
Yeah. Upon being...
Gave us a ride on your new hog.
Upon being alerted, everybody does have this same email. In quick investigations, as sort of like, you know, normal business hours, if not normal awake hours where Berm is concerned, you know, approach, you realize that this email went to the four of you plus Bronwy, Tama, and Gorister.
Right. And we do know where Apacia has been staying, or do you don't?
You do not.
All right.
Shit, damn, fuck. I message Bronwy right away, and then we make sure to put out a sort of fixer network equivalent of an APB, as it were.
I'm trying to work back through like a server trace to find geography.
Give me one second here. First, I would like a criminal underworld roll. We'll make it plus clever in this case for 2d6 plus 5 from Kato.
Cool. That's a 4 plus 5, so 9.
Okay. And then hacking roll, no ghosting required from Burn.
That is an 11, so 18.
Okay. So the good and bad news on your findings, Burn, is that this is the rough equivalent of like a Hotmail account. So it's real easy to get the information. It doesn't take but 5 minutes. The bad news is that the information is almost spectacularly unhelpful because it just goes to the local server for that service.
Yep.
It does confirm for you that the sending and receipt of the email were not offset. And so this was sent in, let's call it like 2-ish hours after you went to bed at around 4:30 a.m.
Okay.
Kato, you sort of start putting out cautious feelers here and discover that nobody's really got much on Apacia or her goings on. Cal?
I respond to the email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are you?
I mean, it doesn't bounce. It goes through. Mm-hmm. But no quick reply is forthcoming.
I also try my resources, whatever they are.
Okay.
At this point.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's make that an investigation roll plus clever. So 2d6 plus 6.
Ah, my streak is over. 6 total. So 12.
Okay. So I don't remember precisely when it was, but I think it's on air somewhere that you do have a patient's full name, and it appears that she gave you her government name, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so you are able, in relatively short order, I mean, simultaneous, I think, with Burns' you know, email trace here, to sort of track down where her legal residence is. And it's sort of one district over from Selden, in fairly anonymous apartment housing, so that at least maybe gives you a starting point for a physical investigation. By the time you and Burn have finished those and Kato has kind of started turning up, you know, like unuseful responses from putting out feelers among the fixers, or I guess that's not exactly the way I would want to say it, putting out fixer feelers. There we go. At about that point, everyone included on that email has congregated, you know, piecemeal in the back room of the frontispiece, though. For his part, Gorister has just been working on his normal projects and not particularly participating in anything that's been going on about, you know, the investigation. However, Kato, you specifically will notice that he is actually being pretty attentive to the conversation, even if he's not contributing to it. much or at all. I think that this, pending anything specific that we want to get on air before we conclude, is a pretty good place to wash up for this session, so that we can begin with the nitty gritty of this investigation next time.
I also suggest that we ping Joseph Chapek, if I'm remembering his name correctly.
Yeah, it was going to be my suggestion, Joseph and or Dev.
Okay. I will make a note of that for coming in next time, so that we don't forget it. Any other things that we particularly want to have on the record for beginning next time?
I make a note that I can only carry one passenger on my motorcycle.
Good, good.
Amazing.
So we just said it, but I was typing and my working memory lost. It was Joseph and who else?
Dev.
Okay. Good deal. Made that note. Anything else we want to get on the docket before we conclude here? If not, then I think we'll conclude this session of Dice Punks there. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll all join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com, and on Tumblr and Blue Sky as @dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell, so say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening. Shit damn, fuck damn, fuck damn, fuck shit damn.
Thanks for listening, what Cato said.
Thanks for listening, and don't misplace your friends.
Well, yes, thank you for listening, and in the spirit of Chekhov's gun, now might be a good time to mention the inevitable heat death of the universe.
I do want to keep the podcast going forever, so... Thank you for me as well. And as the poet once said, everything will always be all right when we go shopping. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for a Cato log. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger, Drew. Check out their other work in the link in the show notes. Editing on our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who's appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet, where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by the one and only formerly officer, Callisto Armitage Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Machevic, Freya Erling's daughter, and Minerva Chanda. You can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwiredisland. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, DicePunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks After Show for episode 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
We're all so monitored, and we know it. If we want to work and live, and sure, I mean, yeah, do crime, then we spend a huge amount of our time and our effort trying to be moderately less monitored. Measures and countermeasures, disinformation, falsified locations, identities stacked on identities until one of the load-bearing ones becomes so rotten that it has to be ripped out like a bad beam. This isn't just annoying, isn't just stressful, it's haunted. Haunted, that is, by the possibility of disappearing after all, despite everything. As part of the paranoia, thinking about what it would take to disappear completely and intentionally, what you'd have to give up, who you'd have to give up if it were no longer an option to be you. That would, of course, represent a victory, never a complete one, but a victory over surveillance, over being seen more broadly. It'd be a way of claiming, of reclaiming power. So no, that's not the haunted part. The haunted part is what you're running from, is the very real possibility of disappearing unintentionally, on terms other than your own, of being disappeared as a transitive verb. Haunted because when someone does disappear, you generally don't know, probably can't know, have to know, you may never know, which kind of disappearing has taken place. Haunted because you know you could become the ghostly presence. You know that the people who care about you could be trapped in that state of not knowing, and that you couldn't save them from not knowing, even when the only value you're sure you have is helping people when they need it, or not written in ink the way we might imagine. Things get lost. People get lost. Since waking up today, I've been thinking about that.